So the people that are seeking something with a religious background, and we're trying to help them get to where they can make the changes that are necessary. As these studies yield fruit, as we see people that are added by the Lord, that obviously raises then another level of responsibility in trying to help these new Christians organize themselves into local congregations. That usually means that once some people have been baptized in a particular place, we schedule a return to that city as quickly as we can, try to get back there and give some additional reinforcement. Unfortunately, there are not enough Christians prepared in Brazil to just send somebody to go and live, a preacher to go and work with every new congregation that might start. But we try to help the people that are there understand what they need to do, and then we try to get back to do as much as we can as often as possible. That means that literally I've had situations where I've baptized people at 11 o'clock on Saturday night when I had to leave at 6 o'clock on Sunday morning because I had to be somewhere else for Sunday worship, and giving those people quick summaries, quick instructions of how they were going to do their worship the next morning with a promise that I'd be back as quickly as possible to help them again. But sometimes that's the best we can do because of the opportunity spread out over such a large area. In these past 2 years, then, I want to focus in a little bit now on where we've gone and what kinds of things have happened in some of the different places. Our work has focused on 6 different states, and I'll comment a little bit about the work in these different places. Rio, which is the state next state up the coast from São Paulo, the map here shows cities, it does not show states, so you may not be able to see each state identified there. But Rio is the capital city of the state of Rio. Ceará is way to the north, and I'm just going to use the old-fashioned pointer, but way up along the north coast you can see the city of Fortaleza. That's the capital city of Ceará. Paraíba would be down the coast a ways between Natal and Recife. You can see it right on the far eastern coast. In fact, João Pessoa in Paraíba is the easternmost city on the mainland of the Americas. So the closest I've ever been to the African continent when I've been to that state. Bahia is the state which includes the city of Salvador, down a little bit further. Sergipe is between Salvador and Maceió. It's a small state right along the coast. And Minas Gerais is the state that includes Belo Horizonte, which is to our north from São Paulo. Those are the 6 states that we have concentrated on in the last 2 years. Literally one led to another. And I'll show how that has happened in a couple of cases here as we look at those a little bit more specifically. Much of our travel has been done by airplane or by bus, but we have done some of it by driving as well. In fact, realizing the need to get to several places in a fairly short amount of time, Benita and I made a road trip from late January to early March, in which we drove a little more than 5,000 miles. And I know these pictures are a little bit blurry, but the bottom left is a federal highway in Brazil over which we traveled. In fact, we spent the better part of a couple of days on highways that were about like that. In fact, that's one of the better parts of that highway, as I recall. There are places where you look for thin strips of asphalt between the potholes, and places where you literally have to stop the car and study the road to figure out what's the least dangerous way to get through that particular patch of it. Fortunately, we were able to make that trip without any serious problems, had no problems with any kind of robberies along the way. One tire went flat, but not on the road while we were stopped for the night, and no other problems with the car or with anything else. It was an experience and a rather exhausting trip in some of the parts of it along the way. We were able, though, on that trip to work with brethren and to do some public studies in some different states. And I'll talk about some of those as I work through these 6 that I just mentioned. I want to back up now to Rio de Janeiro. I'm not even pronouncing it right in Portuguese or English. I'm sorry. I'm not sure I can get it straight in English. So anyway, you've all heard of this city. It's probably the most famous city in Brazil. It's the second largest city in Brazil, and only a couple hundred miles from where we live in São Paulo. So it made sense to be a logical beginning point if we were going to try to start doing things in other cities. So we started with Rio. We went over there. I went over once to kind of find a place to do the work and to do some initial scouting, make some initial contacts. And then several brethren from São Paulo went over for a long weekend. We did a lot of door-to-door canvassing, had already scheduled the public studies, had sent invitations to those. And we had, as I recall, maybe 25 or 30 people that came to those studies that first time. We've been back there a few other times, and it had that kind of response pretty consistently in the work in Rio. The frustration in Rio has been to see it really materialize into anything of people making decisions. There are a lot of people who are willing to participate in studies. They ask good questions, make good comments, talk about how much they appreciate the studies. But when it comes down to the point of making a break from their practices that they're already involved in and deciding to obey the gospel, it's been difficult. And for others, it's been difficult to really show the commitment to even follow through with what they say they already believe. Samuel, who had worshipped with us in São Paulo for several years, and his family moved to a city near Rio before we began going over there. And he has offered to help with further follow-up in Rio. But frankly, so far I've been rather disappointed in the response that we've seen in Rio, and have not been as eager to go back there as I have been to go to some other places. However, we went to Rio because that looked like a logical place to us. Apparently God had something else in mind, because it was through the contact and the work in Rio that another door was opened that has turned out to be one of the most productive opportunities that we've seen in several years. I want to explain a little bit about the background to this and how a contact with a man who lived 3,000 kilometers away, about 2,000 miles away from Rio, was actually the way that the door was opened for us. We were there in November of 2006, the first time we had done public studies in Rio. Several brethren from São Paulo were there helping, and a man was there staying in that hotel. And I want to explain a little bit of how he got to be in that hotel. Carlos Mauricio is the man's name. He works for the equivalent of the Census Bureau in Brazil, way up north in the city of Fortaleza, about 2,000 miles away from Rio. There was a convention of Census Bureau workers, some of the department heads or something, in Rio, and somebody from his division was required to attend. It would normally be his responsibility. However, his father was dying, literally. His father died the next month. So Carlos Mauricio did not want to make the trip to Rio. He asked if somebody else could go in his place. Somebody else agreed to do that. And at the last minute, that person canceled out, and Carlos Mauricio ended up making the trip. He went to Rio, and the others who were meeting there in Rio for this convention, almost all of them stayed at a hotel in the southern part of the city down near the beaches. Carlos Mauricio and one other man stayed in the same hotel where we were doing our studies up in the northern, in the downtown part of the city. And he went to the desk there at the hotel and asked them about where he could find a Baptist church. For more than 30 years, he had been a member of a Baptist church up in Fortaleza. So he asked about where he could find one. They told him, but they said, "But you know, they're having Bible studies in this room right over here," and pointed to the conference room where we were doing the studies. So he went to check it out. Liked what he was hearing, so he stayed and participated in every study that was possible until he had to go back home on Saturday. He got back home and he talked with his family, relatives back there. He and a sister of his realized that they had already received some of our literature sometime before. He just hadn't made the connection that it was the same people. And so they got really excited about it. He got on the telephone to call São Paulo asking for help. One of the men who had gone with me to Rio was João Batista. João Batista agreed to make a trip up to Fortaleza to try to work with Carlos Mauricio and these other contacts. I don't remember how many people were baptized on that first trip. There were a few, if I recall correctly. João made two trips up there before I went at all, had baptized a few people. They'd started meeting together as a new congregation in that city of Fortaleza. João was coming back from these trips each time telling me that I needed to get to Fortaleza. But I was already working with other things in Rio. So it took a little while to be able to schedule that in. But finally, in March of 2007, I was able to get to Fortaleza for the first time. When I went, however, I told João that if I go, I'd like to also send out invitations to other contacts we have in the city, put something on the internet, and see who else might show up. In Rio, as I've mentioned, with all the work that was done there, we'd had maybe 25 or 30 people come to the studies. So we went to Fortaleza, and Benita and I went alone on this particular trip. I already knew Carlos Mauricio. He introduced me to a few other people, but we didn't really know who else to expect. We'd sent out invitations. Considering that Fortaleza is about a fourth the size of Rio, and we'd had 25 or 30 come in Rio, if we'd had six or eight people show up, we were going to be happy with that, and we're going to work on studying with those people. So Benita and I were there the first night waiting for people to come in, and 57 people came. Now, you can imagine a gospel meeting where you have a ratio of 28 visitors for every one of you. don't think it all fit in here. And it barely fit in the space that we had reserved. Normally, I'd been looking for places to handle 30 or 40 people for these studies. Fortunately, we had a room that was supposed to handle up to 60, and we just about filled it that first night. What we realized then is that in this group of 57 people, there were a number of people from various denominations. We had a very lively study that night and the other days of the studies that weekend. There were also some people that came from some existing churches of Christ in that area, groups that were struggling with some internal problems, and they've got all kinds of problems, honestly, in the churches in that area. Problems over what the church is supposed to be and is supposed to do, how it's supposed to be organized, what kind of leadership a church ought to have. Problems over the role of women in public worship, use of instrumental music, marriage and divorce. You get the idea. You can just about name it, and they've got a problem with it in that area. And some of these people were very frustrated with that, concerned about it. They were looking for some help, but they didn't know what to think about me, because they'd also heard some bad things about me. There'd been some certain campaigns to talk about how I was going to be some terrible horned auntie or something that was going to cause all kinds of problems for them. So some of them didn't know what to think about, as far as I was concerned. They were coming first to check me out, to find out what kind of a person I was, what kind of teaching I was going to do, and then to ask for some help. The result of all that is that opened doors for some opportunities with some of these congregations and with some individuals in some of those congregations that has kept us busy in subsequent trips to Fortaleza. I think I've been there 5 times now over the last little more than a year. João Batista also continued to make some trips up there, and in January of this year, he and his family moved to Fortaleza. João had been working as an evangelist in São Paulo, and he is now in Fortaleza to help the brethren in the new congregation there and to whatever extent he's able in some of these other groups that were reaching out and asking for help. So that has been an extremely encouraging work in Fortaleza. It's one that also presents some real challenges. It's going to have its difficulties over time, but as we've seen initial progress in that city, we've all been very encouraged by it. I've had opportunity, I believe, 3 times in the last year and a half to stop through the state of Bahia and to have some contact with brethren there. Gerson, whom I've mentioned here before, has been preaching in Bahia for about 10 years now. He was converted in São Paulo sometime before that. He is in the city of Jequié. Most of you know something about the background of the work in Jequié, the congregation that started there back in 1998. So in those trips to Bahia, I spent some time in Jequié, working with the church and also doing some public studies. We've had a good number of visitors come to those studies, good contacts that they've been able to then continue to try to follow up with. We also have done some work in Dias d'Ávila, which is a city to the north of Salvador, about 4 or 5 hours by bus from Jequié. In Dias d'Ávila, there were 2 Christians living in that city, but who were having a hard time seeing that they needed to do something about at least the 2 of them getting together to worship. And so we've tried to help them with that. And at the same time, close to that, in the capital city of Salvador, we've done public studies, I think on 3 different occasions now, trying to find some additional contacts in Salvador. Again, a city that looked like it should have good potential. 2.5 million people, a number of contacts by mail as well as by internet. But to this point, we've been a little bit disappointed with what we've seen in Salvador. One more time, however, we looked where we thought we ought to go, and it seemed like God had something else in mind. It was through Salvador that he opened a door in Aracaju, in the state of Sergipe. And again, I want to tell you a little bit about the story. This fellow that's in the picture here, on the right side in each of these pictures, his name is Jean. We had set up the studies in Salvador a year or so back, and had put the information on the internet. We did studies on Thursday night, Friday night, and had scheduled studies for Saturday morning and Saturday afternoon, 6 hours of studies. On Saturday morning, as we were getting ready to start, there was a young man who came in who explained that he had gotten on a bus at midnight the night before in the city that he lives in Sergipe, had been on a bus most of the night, and then had found his way to the hotel, and he was there to participate in these studies. He participated in the studies all day and didn't nod off sleeping during any of them. participated in the studies all day, had lunch with us, and during that time we talked about a number of things as well. And after we were done, I talked to him a little bit more. He indicated that he would not be able to catch his bus back home until later that night, about 10:30 or so. So he had some time available still. So we studied together during that time, just the two of us. Gave me an opportunity to understand that he had already left denominationalism. He and his wife had been worshiping together in their home, trying to do what the Bible teaches, but that he was reaching out and asking for some help. Well, as typically in those cases, I wondered about whether he had ever really obeyed the gospel. And so I shifted the subject to that question. And after a little while, Jean asked literally the following question: is there water here at the hotel? And so we went up to the roof of the hotel and Jean was baptized. A little while later, we walked him to the bus stop. He got his bus to head back home, where he would get back home early the next morning. About a month later, we went to Aracaju. Jefferson met me there so we could work with them for a few days and try to begin some preliminaries for some public work there. His wife, Kelly, studied with me when we were there, and she also was baptized. So they have begun meeting together. And since that, as we've gone back for some of these other public studies, we've found some other people who at least appear to be searching for the same thing. And so they're working together with some of those other people in between the times that we're able to get there to visit with them. João Pessoa, in Paraíba, this is the one I mentioned as the easternmost city on the American continent, has a work that is very, very encouraging to me. I've known about the work in João Pessoa, had an indirect involvement in it for about 10 years. The initial contacts that led to the start of the church in João Pessoa came in through correspondence work and through the internet. But I had not been to João Pessoa until this past year, in fact, earlier this year. Other brethren had gone up. Some other Brazilians had gone there. Some of the North Americans who visit us have been there. Gary Fisher and Joe Works have both been there. Carl Ballard lived there for a couple of years before he moved back to the United States. So there have been others who had worked with them, but I had never had the opportunity to go. So on this 5,000-mile road trip that we did back in February, we included some time in João Pessoa. We wanted to spend some time with the church. We also wanted to try to work with additional contacts there and see what other possibilities might come in. There were some additional contacts of people that came to the public studies. We had an attendance of around 30 or so at most of those studies. And the brethren there continue to study with some of the people that they met during that time. The pictures that you see at the top two, show the congregation in its Sunday meeting place. They meet at a home. Now, you need to realize this is in a city that's quite to the north and right on the coast. It's a hot city, so there's never a problem of having to be in a heated environment. But they use, on the left you can see, a garage, and this is a one-car garage that you could put a Honda Civic in, but you might have difficulty getting out of your car afterwards. You'd at least have to fold the mirror in to be able to open the door enough to try to squeeze out. That's how narrow the garage is. So they line up chairs in that garage and have people sitting there. But the podium is placed to where you can look toward the garage this way and toward the patio over this way, with the corner of the house in between, and the rest of the people sit over in the patio. So the people on the back row here can't see the people on the back row over there because the house is in the middle. But everybody can see whoever's up front teaching. And that's where the congregation in João Pessoa meets. Very, very content with that. They're continuing to work. They've had a number of additions. Probably about 30 or so people meeting there in that congregation. And we were extremely encouraged by the attitudes, by the spiritual nature of the people that we worked with there. We also did public studies in a community center in that city, in that state, or city. And several people came to that. We had some very good studies. In that case, a couple of Catholic women showed a great deal of interest in the studies while we were there. And these brethren continue to work with them on the follow-up. In that particular city, there are brethren there who are capable of doing a good job in the follow-up. Another interesting door that has opened for us is in a smaller city called Ipatinga in the state of Minas Gerais. Minas Gerais is the state to our north. Ipatinga is about 500 miles north of where we live. Again, it's the story that led us there that I think indicates the thirst that some people have who are really seeking to understand how to serve the Lord. A man named Marcelo, the picture is blurry enough, I won't even try to tell you which one he's in, but he's in this picture up here. A man named Marcelo, who's in his 30s, and his wife had decided back a couple of years ago that they just could not continue in the denominations that they had been a part of. That was not what they were finding in the Bible, and they were not going to continue with that. So they decided to leave the denomination they were in most recently and to start meeting at home. Then they felt quite isolated. Could it be that nobody else in the world understands that that's not right? And so they started doing some research and used the internet for that. And Marcelo told me that he found several sites on the internet that talked about being Christians without participating in denominations. And so they started studying these different sites. He said, we kept studying until we would find something on one of those sites that clearly contradicted the scriptures. Because he said, there'd be a lot of good stuff, but then you'd find something that was just obviously wrong. He said, when I ran into that, I quit studying that site. Narrowed the list down. He said, so I continued studying and eliminating sites until I was only studying things from one site. He said, that's when I sent an email to you. The only site that he had found that he felt was consistent with what the scriptures teach is the material that we had on the internet. So he sent an email, and he asked if we could talk by telephone. Actually, he wanted me to talk with his father. Now, remember, Marcel was 30-some years old. His father is in his 60s. His father had spent more than 40 years in the same denomination, but was also troubled by the same things that were bothering Marcel. So I called and talked to his father, Silaif, and had a good conversation with him on the phone. He expressed his frustration with the religious environment of the city there. It's a city of 200, 250,000 maybe in population, and asked what we could do to help. It took a while to be able to schedule a visit to them, but I was able to get to Ipachinga. I believe it was in October of last year. The dates get a little fuzzy. I was able to get in there just for a rather quick visit. I got in there on a Thursday night and had to leave very early on Sunday morning. So we used the time. They had cleared their schedules to be able to spend as much time as possible studying. And at the end of that period, on Saturday night, Marcelo was baptized and his brother-in-law, Dailton, was also baptized. And that was the case where I had to leave. I had a plane to catch early the next morning to get back to São Paulo to be there for worship in São Paulo. And so I was not able to stay to worship with them on the first Sunday. So I had to give a very quick orientation to them Saturday night with a promise that I'd get back as soon as possible. By the time I got back, the number was up to four. Marcelo's wife had been baptized, and his father had made a clean break from the denominational practices he had been involved in. And so they were working together with those four. And then on my third trip there, Dal's wife was also baptized. In fact, that's a muddy pond in the back of Marcelo's house, and that's where we baptized Neijumar that day. On the last trip there, I was also able to do public studies in a downtown hotel where we had contact with several other people that they hope to continue to work with some of those people. So the church in Ipachinga is now numbers five people. There's been another brother from Belo Horizonte that has gone up to help on occasion, a man who participated with us in São Paulo years ago named Carlos Santana. He has gone up and helped several times as well in Ipachinga. It was a very encouraging work to see the attitude of these people, wanting to do what's right, despite all the opposition that they have faced from relatives. Whenever we go out to these other places and put the information on the website and send out the invitations, I get letters of complaint, emails saying, why won't you do this in São Paulo? Why are you only doing this everywhere else? Why don't you do it here? Well, the answer in my mind had been that we had already worked in São Paulo fairly extensively over a period of nearly 14 years. And during that time, several congregations had begun. And that when contacts in São Paulo wanted to find a place they could study, that we could get somebody in touch with them from one of these congregations. And so I had not thought so much about doing the public studies in São Paulo. But there were so many that asked about it. I talked with the brethren in several of these different congregations and decided that I would try to do something in downtown São Paulo and see what kind of interest we might generate there. In this case, we would have the advantage of more Christians being able to help in the follow-up. So we did that in May of this year. I talked with some of the brethren in different congregations and asked for their help as far as the work that needed to be done. Passing out flyers door-to-door, being there for the studies to receive people and to try to set up personal studies with them. We passed out about 14,000 flyers, mailed out another 3,500 to the contacts that we had in that area, put the information on the internet, found a place in downtown to do the studies, And about 27 Christians. I didn't want a lot, really. I wanted it, in fact, I prefer a proportion where sometimes we have more non-Christians than Christians there, because it gives them a liberty to feel like they can really ask their questions. But I did want enough that we'd be able to have some follow-up and some personal conversations going on. And so about 27 brethren from different congregations came and helped during that time. And during 3 days, Thursday night, Friday night, and 6 hours on Saturday, we had 75 visitors in that work there in São Paulo. Every one of us left there encouraged. All the brethren who participated, most of them were able to have opportunity to talk with people. Several of them set up additional Bible studies with some of these people. There were two baptisms immediately after that series of studies as a result of that series, and ongoing work that others are doing, the other studies that come as a result of that. That was right before we left for our trip, like 10 days before. So I'm anxious to get back and learn a little bit more about the follow-up that has been done since that time. I'm not going to go through the whole list here in detail, but sometimes people ask a little bit about churches in Brazil. August of this year will mark 15 years since we moved to Brazil. And as I said, I didn't go through all the background history of all the different ones who participated in the work during those 15 years. After 15 years, what we can report are these different congregations meeting in different places today. There have been a few cases of congregations that started and then later either merged back with other groups, or in some cases, people moved away or they gave up. There have been a few of those. But the groups that are currently meeting throughout the country that would receive us, I'll use that distinction, groups that we have a relationship with, that we would be able to go and work with, and in fact do go and work with most of these. The list is up here. The first two are congregations that we did not help to start. The church in Parque Santo Antonio, where my family has been worshiping since 1995, was already in existence when we arrived in Brazil, asked for our help, and we've been working with them ever since that. The church in Jardim São Bernardo also started before we had contact with them. Very soon after that, asked for help, and we've continued to maintain a relationship and to help them since that. All of the other congregations on this list are churches that we've helped to start during these last 14 years. I've noted in parentheses something about how most of them were started. Contacts made through publications in most cases. Some cases, the result of work from brethren in Parque Santo Antonio, the PSA refers to that. Brethren going out to teach, or sometimes groups that have left out from Parque to start new congregations, either in other parts of the city or in other cities. At one point, as we were trying to look at what had happened with the church at Parque, I just mentioned that the congregation at Parque is a lot smaller than it used to be. It's back down to about the size it was when we first started working with them back in 1995. At one time, the congregation had gotten up to about 180 or so in attendance, and we're down to about 100 to 110 now. But we sat down to look at it one day and realized that in the last 12 years, brethren from Parque have helped in the start of 18 congregations, and in many of those cases, with people going out to start them. A congregation that shrinks for that reason is not something I can be too critical of. And I've been encouraged by that. To be honest, the congregation at Parque is in some ways struggling right now, because we have, just to have an idea, a few years ago, we had 2 elders and 5 deacons, and within a period of 1 year's time, one of those elders and 4 of those deacons moved away. The eldership was dissolved, and those men moved to other places. A couple years after that, the other one who had served as an elder also moved away. And so the congregation does not have what it used to have as far as the able men that were involved in that work. Others are having to learn and to step up to the plate and do more. So in some ways, we're facing a period that's somewhat difficult. That's not helped by the fact that I've been traveling so much and not spending a great deal of my time there. That also requires that others assume more responsibilities. But on the other side of that, the congregation has had solid teaching over a period of the last 12 years or so. Good opportunities to be able to continue, and I believe that it will continue to grow and to be helpful in other places. The church here has been helpful in our work with publications almost from the very beginning, and that work continues to be a significant part of the opportunities that we see, making contacts, even in places where the initial contact might come through the internet. We're often able to supplement that when we go to those places. We usually spread out a table and put a lot of material out there, encourage people to take it. And there are times that we get to the homes of people who have already received material by mail, and they'll bring out notebooks full of material. Not only have they stored it in a notebook, but a lot of times they've gone through and they've underlined or they have highlighted point after point, looking it up, studying the scripture references. That's one of the reasons that in several of the places we've gone, in just a matter of a few days, there are baptisms in the beginning of congregations, because there are people that are already prepared and have already studied before we get there. So those efforts continue to be a fundamental part of what we're doing. The other side of that work is the work on the internet. Initially, our work was much more done by printed page than by internet. But we started back about 1995 putting the same material on a website on the internet. The material I'm going to mention to you now, the numbers I'm going to mention up here, to be honest, just kind of blow my mind. My kids would say that would be a very small explosion. But anyway, the numbers that we have seen as the internet has become more accessible to people in Brazil has been a tremendous growth in the accesses to that site. It's helped by the fact that we've been working on this for about 13 years now. And so a lot of material is on the website. There are not very many of you here that can read Portuguese, but those who can vouch for that looking at the website. We've got something over 1,500 different articles on that site, a few complete books. We started about a year and a half ago working with audio messages. I didn't know if it'd be all that interesting to people. It has been. Right now we are getting an average, and these numbers are based on May of this year, an average of 3,100 downloads of audio messages every day. Apparently it has had some effectiveness. And frequently when I go places to do studies, people will come in and say, I've listened to all of the sermons that are on the website, this has helped me, whatever. A lot of people are listening to that. The site currently is getting about 9,300 visits each day. The average visit goes to between 4 and 5 different pages on the site, meaning that in a month's time, in May of this year, there were more than 1.3 million page visits to the site. Now, those numbers are phenomenal to me. Maybe they wouldn't be to some others and other kinds of activities, but for people going to a website about Bible study and to click on more than 1 million pages a month, it's been extremely encouraging to me to see that. Other information that we're able to get from that. In May of this year, 73% of the people who visited the site marked us in their favorites to come back. Or either we already had marked us or added us into their favorites so that they would be able to come back to the site. Even if they didn't stay very long that first time, the average person stays on the site approximately 6 to 7 minutes. But more than half of the people just come in and leave. So that what means that the others are actually staying on there an average of more like 12 to 14 minutes. And 3% of the people that visit the site stay on it for more than an hour at a time, looking at different things on the site. Because of that, we've tried to find ways to tweak it, to improve it, to be able to do things that will get more usable contacts from that. One of those things has been to try to get identifiable contacts. When you visit a website, theoretically, nobody knows who you are. They might have some way of trying to track that and sneaky ways of trying to get that information, but we don't know who those people are that are visiting our website. The only way we can really know that is if they will provide us some information. So we work with some things to try to get names, emails, city of residence, maybe even complete addresses and some other information. One of the ways is by offering them a correspondence course online. We're using Sewell Hall's Jesus the Way course for that. But when they finish that course, they can ask for another course to be mailed to them, and we mail them Gary Fisher's course on the Book of Mark. That way they give us name and address. That's one of the things we've done. A second thing that we've done is to put a form on there that says, if you don't live in the cities where we've been doing these studies, but you think you'd like for us to do them closer to where you live, tell us why. So we ask for a name, for an email, for the city the person lives in, and some background information. Another method we've used is when people download certain things off the site, we give them the option to fill out a quick form to receive additional updates about it. All of those things together are bringing in currently about 20 new contacts a day, identifiable contacts, or about 7,000 a year. We continue to maintain the list of these emails. We catalog all that information so that when we go to target new cities for studies, we have an idea of where there might be either a good concentration of contacts or particularly interesting contacts. Sometimes people will write in observations. They'll give us a couple of paragraphs of why they're looking for something. Sometimes those cases merit immediate attention and not just cataloging them away to try to get to them somewhere down the line. A couple of other things related to the website that have been very helpful. There are a lot of people in Brazil who do not have easy internet access at home. They can use it at work or at school or at a cyber cafe, but they don't have it at home. Some of them have an old computer at home, but not any internet access. So to help those people, we started offering late last year that we put the entire website onto one CD. So far it still fits on one CD. That they'd be able to take that CD and plug it into the computer at home, and without even connecting to the internet, that they'd have access to everything that's on the site. So we started offering that. We've sent out about 1,200 or so of those CDs over the last few months. Once we had that figured out, we then realized that there are sites on the internet that allow you to do big downloads, files that have hundreds of megabytes of information. So we put that whole CD together in a compacted file on one of those sites and started offering it on our site. If you want to, instead of waiting to get it by mail, you can just download the whole thing at once. On my computer, with my internet connection, broadband, it took me about 2 hours to download the thing. But it can be done. In the first month, 10,000 people did that, downloaded the entire site. So then, Carl Henneke, who does the website, had the idea, well, maybe we ought to offer packages of of audio messages, too. Instead of downloading single messages one at a time, he put together 15 sermons in one packet and compacted that and put it on there and said, if you want to download all 15 at once in MP3, you can do that. In the first 3 weeks, 5,000 people did that. Those are the kinds of things that we're seeing of the eagerness that people are showing to learn and how those efforts, especially through the publications and the website, are bringing in contacts literally all over the country. Now, that presents challenges. We still have a relatively small number of Christians that we know in Brazil to work with. They need to be strengthened so that the congregations that are there will be more solid, so that there will be more people able to be involved. I have long believed that the future of the work in Brazil depends on Brazilians, not on foreigners. I may be there to stay. There may be others who will go at times, but the primary work will be done by Brazilians. And so we need to work on equipping those people, strengthening them for that. A new generation opens up new possibilities. Some of the younger generation are better educated than their parents, able to do some things that their parents were not able to do. That will also be important in that work. And when we talk about follow-up on contacts throughout Brazil, I mentioned work in 6 states. But you need to remember that Brazil is bigger than the 48 contiguous states of the United States. If you had contacts coming in from all over the country, but did not know brethren in most of those other areas, you can imagine something of the task of trying to follow up. It will be an ongoing effort, something that's going to require probably about as much energy as we can muster to put into that. But I think it's a very worthwhile effort. And in that, I think we will continue to give our attention primarily to the larger cities, although there will be occasions like Ipatinga that will certainly be worth going to some of the smaller cities as well. The family has changed in 15 years. When we went to Brazil, Joshua, our youngest, had just turned 6. He'll be 21 next week. Our daughters were little grade school girls. One of them is now a mother of 4. They're both now married to Brazilians and living, all of the kids and grandkids are living within 2 miles of us. I couldn't really complain if it were otherwise, because I took the grandchildren of my parents and Benita's parents 5,000 miles away from them. So I couldn't really complain. But it is kind of nice having them all fairly close together. All of them are worshiping in the same congregation that we're in there in Parque Santo Antonio. Those 15 years have gone by very quickly because there has been so much going on, so much to do, so many people involved in that. And as I mentioned at the outset, the congregation here has had an integral part in that. And I thank God for you and for what you have done, and I hope we'll be able to continue to do to help in those efforts in Brazil. We'll never know all of the results. We'll never know all of the fruit that's produced by the seed that has been sown or that will be sown if God allows us to continue. But what is important is that God will know. And He will be able to give the increase and to see the increase and to realize people having the opportunity to know Him and to know His Word because somebody cared enough to either go or to send or to help and to pray for those who are trying to teach so that the gospel could be spread in that country. There are a lot of other countries in this world. I know practically nothing about most of them. But I know a little bit about Brazil and what's been done there and what needs to be done. There is still before us a tremendous task in that country. And I pray that brethren like you will be able to continue to help in that so that we can try to continue to do as much as possible. And we need to be thankful to God for what He has already done, for the doors that He's opened, for those honest hearts that He's brought into contact with the gospel, for those new congregations that have sprung up in different parts of the country, and for others that are still seeking that He may bring into contact with the truth in the coming months or years. So let's please continue to pray, continue to thank Him, and continue to do whatever we're able to do to try to help the gospel be spread. We're going to sing a song in just a moment as an invitation that talks about Zion's call. The Word of God goes out from Zion. He calls us to be obedient to Him. He calls us to receive the refuge that only He can offer. Peter said in Acts chapter 4 that there is no other name given among men by which we must be saved. It is through Jesus Christ. The only reason that I have for being in Brazil is because Jesus Christ needs to be preached to Brazilians. But He needs to be preached to North Americans as well. If you recognize your need to repent and to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, you need to act upon that. If you've done that, but have somehow turned away from Him, weakened and strayed away, and need to come back, correcting wrongs that you've committed, you need to deal with that. It may mean asking for help from your brethren here. It certainly will mean asking for help from God. But if there's a way that we can help you in submitting yourself to God's will, being obedient to Him, we encourage you to come to the front while we sing together.